On episode 8 of Widnes Rugby Chat in 2024, Alan Coleman speaks to us after the win over Bradford, and myself and Mike discuss all things IMG, injuries and new signings at the Vikings.
Alan Coleman, another competitive game of rugby that you've come out on top of.
Yeah, over the moon. Just spoke to the lads in there then, and you know, first half we were really disappointed with how we give them too much possession and territory through us, not them owning it, you know. And we give them, I think there's two key penalties in yardage where they get out, and then 2-6 again, and just sloppy from us. Not, you know, from experienced players, and they know that. But it's all about how the game finishes for me. And I thought how we finished it and how we regrouped at half time and said, listen, give them nothing, we win the game. And second half, we give them nothing, you know, and we had all the ball, so it's a sign. We've got to do more of that.
Did you see it getting to that sort of score? Did you see it finishing that at half time? Because it was very close in the first half, and I don't think many people would have predicted the way it ended.
We felt as though we'd left 12 points out there first half. You know, we had some good opportunities. Didn't quite capitalise on them. Got a couple of good ball sets early and lost on tackle 2 and 3. And that's not us. We need build possession. You know, you need build, be composed, build some momentum, and you don't have to score that set, but you know, on the back of it, and make them work hard to get out. And we felt as though we was a bit rushed with what we were doing, so we spoke and said, listen, let's just chill out, let's be composed.
Did you feel, even in that first half where Bradford probably had a bit more of the territory and a bit more of the middle, that creatively it looked like you could score tries, even though you only got the one in the first half? Did you sense that, even at, because it felt like it was more like at the start of the season where it felt like you could score more points if you wanted to?
We just felt as though they didn't really worry us, you know. I know they scored that try, we all have to come. We come quick. Our middles probably don't get over quick enough, and Jack makes a decision to come. I think if Inty comes with us, we nullify it. But we're just a bit off on that, and they finish it well. But other than that, we just felt, speaking to the lads, they felt really comfortable defending, really comfortable. And I think in the last two games, we've shown a real desire how we defend.
If Ryan Ince and Mike Butt hadn't signed new contracts, you might wanted to offer him a new contract after this one.
Mate, I said it all year and I keep saying, you know, I was blessed at the beginning with four. There's two back wings in them in Company where they are, because we need to bring them in as well, because, you know, 78 minutes, Bradford make a 70-metre break, and Mike Butt, who probably did 20-odd carries, chases back and never, ever gives up on it and believes he'll stop that try. And Ryan Ince is similar, 20-odd carries. And that, we've just spoken dressing room as a group, and all lads just stood up and clapped it, because you can't coach that. That's in somebody. And we're very, very lucky at this club to have it, and two talented players there in them areas.
Do you feel like there's not always standout performance, because everyone in the team seems to come together and play well? When you play well, it feels like a whole team effort.
Yeah, and that's sort of, you know, success is built on effort. That's our motto of this year. You know, success is built on effort. So when everybody puts effort in and doesn't single out something or someone, collectively as a team, you'll just work so hard. And then, like you said, nobody really stands out, because everybody's given the same amount of effort. We've got a very talented group out there. This club, all this club's ever needed, what I've seen it, just that belief and that desire. You know, if they don't play well, they won't play week after. That's got to be instilled, you know, and that's what we're getting at the minute. You know, we're busted, and we have to do it tough. And I thought Lucas Green was brilliant when he came off the bench. We saved it. We told at half time we was saving us up just because of the heat and the temperature, so we could go focus on that front foot carries. And I thought Zach's carries again, you know. So Warrington's helping us massively. Brett Bailey missed out today just because of the experience of the team. And I thought Liam Benn, and I thought Liam were really good when he went on. And Brett's fine with that, and Brett's going to be part of it, hopefully, season long, if we can get that. Because we're going to need him. We'll need everybody. But it's vital we're all together on it.
Talk to me about the Keenan Brand situation.
Yeah, it was always going to be like that. We agreed a season loan, but then they come back to us and said, listen, we're having a big team function and nobody's missing. And it was the UFC. So it was from 12 till 6 in the morning. So I spoke to Derek and he went, listen, you will have him back next week, but this week I need him. And it wasn't ideal. It wasn't great, but it was agreed beforehand and we couldn't change that. You know, you've got to respect clubs' wishes. They've been really good with us to allow us to do that, and Keenan will be back with us next week.
When did you find out that he wasn't going to be playing?
Pretty late, really. So we couldn't really change much. So that's why, you know, things went out, and then it was decided, but it is what it is, and we've just got to get on with it. We can't focus on that. But, you know, I thought Jack Owens went really well, to be honest. And that's the good thing about this group. You know, any adversity, we just take it, regroup, and go again.
I mean, in some ways, it might have done you a favour because you certainly looked a lot more creative on that left edge, just on the short side plays with Jack in the centres.
Yeah, and he kept flipping with Lloyd a couple of times, if you noticed, and that was the game plan. You know, we get Keenan Bratt, but, you know, that's a great performance. So it's an headache for me again. And it's got to be right what I choose, and, you know, we've got to do the right thing. It's okay saying you're not going to put people in, but the problem is if you don't, they'll call them back, and then if we get injuries, we'll be knackered. So we've got to be smart how we select this team in the next 7 or 8 weeks.
Would Jack have played otherwise? Is he still carrying a bit of a knock?
No, Jack would have been up for selection last week. We just thought it was vitally important just because of numbers and where we're at with bodies, that we made sure a couple of weeks he got, and it worked for him.
And have you got anything in the pipeline in terms of players coming back or anything like that?
Fingers crossed Matt Fleming, which is another centre, but it's outside backs, which we need. But we're actively looking. You know, potentially there's going to be a middle coming in on the season long again this week. We're trying everything. We spoke to players about clubs, about bringing people in, and we'll sign them, but they just won't let anyone go. Everyone's in the same boat. So I get the frustrations of fans saying season loans don't work. They don't, but if they fill a void for us at the minute and get us through the season, it will work. You know, we've identified next year we need 26, 27 players in the squad.
You've got three... you've got these three wins in a bounce now. It feels like you're building some momentum again, similar to what you did earlier in the season.
Yeah, you know, I've just heard the Whitehaven result, which, you know, it's not ideal because you don't want to see anyone beat that score. And he's a good friend of mine, Johnson. They're doing it tough, so that'll make it even more tougher next week in my eyes, because you want a reaction from a team like that, you know, and they will get a reaction because they're a talented group there. But Sheffield was going to do that to someone. They've lost two games they shouldn't have lost. So yeah, we'll have to focus, regroup. Hopefully we've not picked any knocks up, which is vital for us. There's been no incidents, but I'll go and report, so fingers crossed we might actually be able to train on Tuesday if we're numbers, so that'll be good.
That was Alan Coleman speaking after the win against Bradford. I'll use this opportunity to just apologise slightly for my tardiness. My plan is to get some more interviews lined up, but of course speak to Alan after most games, so, and he generally has interesting things to say, so we'll include him on the podcast as much as possible, but I am planning on getting a few more interviewees lined up, so you're just stuck with me and Mike again for this episode. And Mike, what were your thoughts on the game on Sunday?
Well, what a game. I mean, I don't... didn't quite see it going that way, did you, at half time? I mean, it's probably got to go down as the performance of the season, hasn't it? Certainly for me, it has anyway. I mean, I know Bradford was missing a fair few players themselves, but I mean, you still look down that team sheet, don't you? You know, Kieran Gill's in there, Liam Tindall. Franklin Peller, Mitch Suter, Zach Fulton, John Davis. Has there been a better player than him in the last 10 years in the Championship? You know, you'd be going a long way to find one. And I think the first half, I think it was a real battle, wasn't it? I think if nobody knew what Bradford was going to do, well, I think once they went out warming up and everybody seen the sheer size of them, we knew what was coming. They was going to go route one and try and come over the top of us. And I thought, for the most part of that first half, I thought we was holding them. We was defending, I think, like Alan said, with confidence. You could see that, but we wasn't helping ourselves, was we? We was inviting them into the game and probably, you know, not giving ourselves the leg up we should have, because we seen in that first half, once we got down the other end of the pitch, you know, I'm sure by their standards, Mike Buss and Ryan Ince would be disappointed with them two chances that went begging. But we was moving the ball around with confidence and looked to trouble them. It was just a case of, you know, getting down there and keeping a sustained amount of pressure on. But then second half, you know, what can we say, really? You know, step up Tom Gilmore, step up making barely any errors. And as the game went on, I think the egg gasket went with Bradford. And ultimately, I think if that game had gone on for another 5 or 10 minutes, I really do think we could have put another couple of tries past them at least.
Yeah, in the first half, Bradford I think had a bit more of the, well, they had a bit more of the territory and they had a bit more position. But like you say, as much as they were making yards through the middle, they weren't really looking like creating. I thought Lily looked fairly lively at times. And I thought Pelle did, I think he did well, but he never really seemed to get, he didn't come back on until late on in the second half. And as you say, Widnes had a couple of chances where Lehman, the winger, effectively, well, I suppose you could say he got lucky twice in the first half because he pretty much got undone a couple of times in the second half where he made an intervention where if he hadn't made an intervention, it was a try. But I thought he bit in a couple of times in the second half and that was why Widnes were finding success down that left-hand side more often than not. But yeah, certainly for the half-time score, you couldn't see, you wouldn't necessarily have predicted the final outcome because it was fairly comfortable. As soon as Widnes got to 18-6, Bradford never really, there was no real response from Bradford. You were sort of expecting something to come from them and nothing really did. So it's just a shame. Of course, they fell 1 point short of being able to leapfrog Bradford in the table. But I don't think you can criticise them too much for that. The missed goal kicks were all bang on the touchline. So yeah, but to beat Bradford three times this season is a fair achievement. Might well play them again in the playoffs, you never know. A lot's been said about Bradford's injuries, etc. But let's get it right. They've used 46 players this season. Whether their recruitment strategy or the way they use loans is the right way to go about it is another debate. But it's not as if they've got 10 players injured and they've not replaced them. You know, they've been drafting in players, like you say. I think they had seven overseas players playing on Sunday, and of course, Widnes haven't had. I don't think Widnes have fielded any overseas players since post-administration. I think Will Evans is the only probably Australian signing that they made, and of course he was already over here, was a Welsh international. So maybe there's a moral in that story that you don't necessarily get better quality by going overseas. But an excellent win for Widnes. Touched upon in that Alan Coleman about Mike Button and Ryan Ince, who since we last did a podcast have signed new deals, and both pretty much displayed in Sunday's match exactly why they've got new deals.
Yeah, I mean, you run out of things to say about them, don't you? I mean, they both can finish. They both are the first ones under the post when you've got to play the ball under your sticks to take the ball in. And when they've done that, quite often one of them's there to take another one in the same set. I think they're both as safe as ours is under the eyeball. I've seen both of them land on the reds when the kick pressure comes in and it never puts them off from coming for another ball again. I think they've both got a fair bit of pace. And yeah, I think like Alan said, of course, you've got try-scoring machines like Lachlan Walmsley out there, of course. But I'd argue if you put them pair on Wakefield's flanks, they score exactly the same amount of tries. So there's certainly nobody in the Championship I'd be swapping for either of them two at the moment. And I think the two-year deal, brilliant that it's 2 years. I think that's a real sign and a real positive that we're building for the future. And we want to keep a core group of players together to add to in the future. And long may it continue. And absolutely outstanding. And I think Sunday was... it was a fitting performance and the cherry on the cake of the contracts, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll never stop banging the drum about Ryan Ince's performance against Halifax last season where he had Lachlan Walmsley in his pocket, to be honest. I'll never tire of telling people about that match because I thought he was man of the match by a long way in that win last season. And yeah, we've touched upon Mike Butt before, and I think it's good to get players tied down. You've effectively got we've seen new deals already for arguably three of the most key players in terms of Tom Gilmore, Jack Owens and Jordan Johnston. So it feels like you're sort of heading in the right direction. I know when Matt Shaw was on the other week, he was sort of wondering whether did Widnes move a little bit early in the season to do the deals, but time will tell. I think Matty Fozard and Joe Lyons are already on contract as well for 2025. So, you know, you're looking at your key positions are pretty much locked in. And so now it's about getting hold of the, I suppose, making sure as many of the others can stay as well. The Keenan Brand situation was a funny one over the weekend. So he signed a new deal, well, or he extended his deal to the end of the season on Friday. And then the eagle-eyed amongst you spotted that he was named in the Lee reserve squad for their game on Saturday, having been named in the Widnes 21-man squad for the Bradford game on the Friday night. He then subsequently didn't play for Widnes against Bradford. And the situation was only really clarified when I asked Alan Coleman the question post-match. What are your thoughts on that situation, Mike?
Well, at first, I think like everybody, you know, you're wondering what on earth's going on there. Obviously, fair play to Alan and the club. You know, they've come out and explained themselves. I think for me, maybe what would have put water on the situation would have been that we would have just announced the season-long loan this week. If we'd have done that, I don't think too many people had batted an eyelid, or maybe just in the article that was originally posted about Keenan Brand, maybe just a little section saying that he wasn't going to be available for this week. But as it turns out, there's a surprise name on the team sheet, wasn't there, in the senses, and he didn't do a bad job, did he? I don't know about your thoughts, James, but I think that that one of Ryan Ince's tries, it was real smart play, wasn't it? And a great ball by Owens.
Yeah, I mean, just touching on Brand, I think you probably hit the nail there in terms of communication. There's a little bit of... Clearly, I don't think Widnes knew when they announced the loan deal. So I think... It's hard to say that they could have included it in that because I don't think they knew. I mean, why they wouldn't have known or why Lee wouldn't have let them know before then is you know, another conversation. I think probably what should have happened is that Widnes probably ought to have communicated the situation when they did find out. Whether that was Saturday morning, it would have just shut down any concern or any negativity. You know, of course, the fans are a little bit paranoid about the loan signing situation because we've seen, you know, even recently, Louis Brogan, of course, has gone back. We've seen it in recent seasons where, you know, you sign a player till the end of the season or on a deal and he's getting recalled. I just think communication perhaps could have been a little bit better there. But yeah, as you say, Jack Owens came in. I think Jack Owens probably would have played fullback, to be honest. I know he'd missed the previous game, but I think by the sounds of it, reading between the lines, he would have probably played fullback. But it was interesting how they used Owens and Lloyd Roby, because there has been conversation about Lloyd Roby this season. He's sort of struggled to nail down a place in the team, and now clearly Widnes have got a vacancy in the centres. And it was always a little bit of a, well, is there not a way you can shoe on Roby in there? And the way they seemed to work it on Sunday was that Roby and Owens did a little bit of switching every now and again. I think they looked really good on that left-hand side when they did that. And whether it was Owens running in at full-back or Roby running in at full-back, they were both there. And I think that's what helped open up Bradford, to be honest, on that side a few times that... The centre and the wing, well, the winger particularly, he just couldn't read what Widnes were going to do, and that's why he kept jamming in. And, you know, realistically, if you look at the tape, I think Widnes have got no right to score probably two of them short side play tries at all. You know, from a Bradford perspective, you should be defending them out, but it was the uncertainty that Widnes created, and, you know, a good execution of a, you know, whether it was a cut out pass or otherwise that got them in. So So yeah, I think Alan said it in the interview, they responded well to that situation. You know, Keenan Brown might struggle to get back in the team against Whitehaven next week.
Well, I was going to ask you, James, actually, what if you was the head coach, what would you be choosing for Sunday's trip? Because I think it surprised everybody, like I just said, about the team sheet and the way it looked and the way we set up. But there's no doubt about it, it absolutely worked. I can't see Matt Fleming making the 17 this week. And in fairness to Lloyd Roby, you know, I think, you know, going back to the Halifax game, you know, certainly that first try, you know, he looks right on the top of his game at the moment with his running threat. We've mentioned it a few times on this podcast, you know, how dangerous he can be. And certainly when the field breaks up as well. So which way would you go on Sunday?
Yeah, certainly Roby played his part against Halifax. He was part of that left edge, you would say, well, coming in at fullback. Contributing to, you know, Gilmore and Sam Wilde on that side. I think I think there's a case, an argument to say that Roby's better running down the left channel and he's not quite perhaps got it going the other way. I know there was Widnes sort of got a little bit lucky with it on Sunday. There was one incident where there was a high kick that looked like almost a similar situation to what we saw, was it the Batley game a few weeks ago where Lloyd Roby and Mike Butt, I think it was, clash when it was in the air. The similar sort of thing happened against Bradford. I just wonder whether, is there a lack of communication or is there a lack of understanding when Lloyd Roby's at fullback that maybe they've not quite got to the bottom of? That would seem to be easily rectified if they can get to it. But I think Jack Owens is the fullback, in my opinion. And, you know, as much as Roby has played well, you know, on occasion when he's been there, I think his value to the team is as a utility cover, really. And I think it's unfortunate for him, but he's decided to move on at the end of the season for whatever reason. And so as harsh as it sounds, you're almost going to prioritise the players that you've got for next season. There's no point alienating Jack Owens, for instance. I wouldn't necessarily advocate, you know, playing Roby over Jack Owens anyway, but there's no point alienating Jack Owens by playing Lloyd Roby ahead of him when Lloyd Roby's going to leave at the end of the season anyway. And you might argue that, well, we need to concentrate on winning the games this week or in X number of weeks, but I think that situation. Yeah, Alan Coleman, he hinted that Matt Fleming might be in contention, but unless Warrington were to withdraw Zach Bardsley-Rowe, I don't see any reason for that to change. I would assume that the nature of the Super League deals, the loan deals, is that they're almost probably obliged to play. Well, I'd imagine it's not quite as clear cut as that, but I'd be, you know, ultimately they're on loan to play games. And it's slightly, I know Brett Bailey was 18th man last week, but it's slightly different with someone like Brand because he's not an academy kid who's just come through, who's not got much experience. He's well into his career now. He could probably get a game at several other clubs. So I would expect Brand to probably play. I'd expect Brand to play. I'd expect Owens at fullback and probably Roby would be 18th man. I guess that's what my prediction would probably be.
Yeah, I probably tend to agree with you, to be honest. What did you think about Lucas Green's performance off the bench? I thought he went really well. I thought, you know, there's due to his situation this year, there's nobody kind of more pleased than me that he's seems to be getting a fair crack now and settled and hopefully can stay around the squad for the rest of the season and grow into it. I thought when we were starting to get on top in the game, I thought he's not the biggest of props and kind of his almost like low centre of gravity was really causing them problems and getting us quick play the balls. What was your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think you'll clearly see benefit from it. I think he'll get better and better the more consecutive games he plays. And I've been banging the drum about this on Twitter mainly, that I just find it incredibly unfair on these young players that are, you know, the full time in Super League, and they're getting farmed out and asked to play in random teams every week. I think if you can get someone like him in a settled team week in, week out, he'll prove his worth. And I think you saw that, you know, it was only his second game, but I think you saw that just the way that the rapport that he had with the players was better, the way that even when Widnes scored tries, he was in the thick of it with the celebrations and stuff like that. And I think you get that from building that rapport. He had a little bit of Widnes at the start of the year, didn't he, in pre-season, and it was unfortunate that Widnes couldn't give him the game time. But clearly now Widnes are in the situation where he can play week in, week out, and hopefully that's what does it. Because his situation's almost the reason why Joe Reg exists. Like, he's not really going to get a game at Warrington. He might get the odd game, but if he's not available, if he's not able to play for Warrington, then he's good enough to play for Widnes. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out in the next few weeks. Of course, that situation might change slightly with the signings that Widnes have made this week. Nathan Wild has joined on loan from Lee till the end of the season, which I suppose points towards, you know, clearly Alan Coleman's got a good relationship with Derek Beaumont. So it makes sense to have deals from Lee. I think there's maybe, in fairness to Lee, a little bit of them helping Widnes out because of the Brogan situation, which of course came to coincide with Widnes releasing Ant Walker. He's been at Doncaster, hasn't he, Nathan Wild, the last few weeks. So he's played a few games in the Championship. And then Ryan Lannan, who was widely expected to sign for Widnes for next season, he's now brought that deal forward and signed immediately. I did hear a murmur at Halifax the other week that there were moves being made to make that happen. And I suppose, given the Ant Walker situation that we mentioned, it's good, as much as I don't agree with them situations necessarily because of the contract situation, it's good that at least Widnes have managed to do it in reverse. They've got a player who they'd signed for next season. They've managed to secure him early. And it's a much-needed body in the squad.
Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, starting with Nathan Wild, you know, big bloke coming in, and fair play to Derek, because I've got a little bit of a feeling there. I was, you know, watching from afar, where we've been done a little bit of a favour there, because he's come from Doncaster, having spent a bit of this season over there. And I also noticed, to replace him at Doncaster, Lewis Baxter was recalled by Lee and then loaned out to Doncaster. So maybe a little bit of a favour has been done for us there with the relationship that we seem to be building. Obviously, Alan knows Derek very well. But then, like you say, with Ryan Lannan, I mean, that was music to everybody's ears, wasn't it? And let's face it, James, it's a quality player coming in that's going to add bags of aggression. You know, we've lost Danny Langtree, and he's certainly a player who can come off the bench. And to quote Matt Shaw, he said he skittles a few. He's just the right type of player at the right time. And we've run out of bodies a bit the last couple of weeks, and he will add a bit of energy. And for this playoff push, you know, we've got through that sticky period and, you know, won the last three games, and then you're adding him and Nathan Wild, and with that you've got a couple of players coming back as well. And we might be in a bit of a position for anybody now who's getting knocks. They can be not rested, but certainly managed a little bit better. And all of a sudden, you know, travelling up to Whitehaven, they got put to the sword a little bit last week. You know, if we win that game, you're in a heck of a position again.
Yeah, and I think now, wouldn't it? Yeah, we went to this run of games where we was a little disappointed, weren't we, with that run of three games, the Batley, Swinton and Dewsbury, where we felt Widnes really ought to come out of that with three wins from three. They ended up coming out of it with one win from three. But then on the flip side of that, they've picked up the win at Halifax, the win over Bradford. We talked about this block of six games where we felt if Widnes could come out of the block of six games with three out of six, they'd be in a really strong position. Well, it's game three of that block of six this weekend, and they've already got two wins. And yeah, they've still got, you know, still got to play Wakefield, Featherstone, Sheffield in the run, but clearly in a much better place after three straight wins than they were three or four weeks ago, when, you know, maybe everyone was feeling a little bit sorry for themselves you know, I'd include the fans in that in terms of, you know, done really well at the start of the season, had this fall off as what usually seems to happen, had some player activity that had backfired, you had a few other things going on that was maybe influencing people's thoughts. But yeah, things a lot more positive, and hopefully we'll see that. Whitehaven Widnes haven't had a great run at Whitehaven in recent years, certainly got a very good hiding there a couple of seasons ago, and it's not an easy place to go. And I think, again, Alan mentioned it in the interview, they got absolutely snotted last week by Sheffield, and that's the sort of result where it can go one or two ways, really. You either start feeling sorry for yourself and it happens again, or you want to make doubly sure that you come back from it and put in a decent display. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Whitehaven Widnes face on Sunday. But of course, they can go up there with confidence on the run that they've been on, and ultimately, with what we've got, 9 games to go, the playoffs are in Widnes's hands, and that's a good position to be in.
Absolutely. Thanks for reminding me of that trip up to Whitehaven. That was a heck of a long journey back.
I commentated on that game on my own. Oh. So if you thought you had a hard afternoon, I commentated on my own on that game.
I got a sore neck watching Lachlan Walmsley run up and down the touchline that day. That was for sure. Yeah. But now, it's... Put it this way, Alan, ever the professional, you know, he is right in one sense. There could be a backlash, but put it this way, put another spin on it. I'd rather them get beat and get 78 put on them than put 78 past somebody else, you know, than have it the other way around. So they're going to be low on confidence. So I think it's important we go up there, not with arrogance, but confidence, the right amount of confidence. You know, the league table suggests we are the better team. They've for anybody who's listened to John Tigoli's interviews of late, you know, there's a lack of bodies up there as well. So that they've faced their injury troubles, and you know, we seem to be coming through ours now. And it's a massive opportunity to set ourselves up for them games that you just mentioned ahead. Certainly Featherstone and Sheffield specifically, we owe them one. And nothing, let's have it right, nothing, not everything's looking rosy at Featherstone at the moment. And I'm sure everybody noticed the Mark Aston news over the weekend as well. So there's a potential Sheffield might be coachless as well when we come to play them. So all of a sudden now things are looking up. I think the one player I always look at in Whitehaven's side, who for me always causes us problems and we need to get a grips of and get a grips early and quickly, is Ryan King. He's one of the most unorthodox players in the Championship, but one of my favourites to watch. He seems to get an offload away every time and beat that first man all the time, very dominant in collision. So I think if we're going to win that game, we've got to get a grips with him and grow into it. And like we've seen against Bradford, you know, cut the mistakes out and let's swing the ball that wide and hopefully score points.
Yeah, Whitehaven, of course, Widnes drew with them early in the season, and well, during the pre-season as well. I thought Whitehaven looked really good, but of course, it's difficult for all teams, really. You can look good with your first choice 17 out there, but as soon as you hit a few injuries, it becomes difficult. Injuries are becoming quite commonplace, and we've seen the news about Josh Jones. He's got some sort of brain injury, hasn't he? He retired last year. I was speaking to a current professional earlier today, who again is suffering from the impacts of concussion and may well not play again. With there being so many injuries, do we feel like there needs to be changes? Are we going to see changes to the game? I know we've seen some changes to the tackle height and stuff like that, but realistically, what can change to prevent these injuries?
What can change? I think for me, the obvious, It's got to be the concussion protocols. You know, I think we've got to, rather than players going off for HIAs, and look, a lot of people, when I say this, might disagree with me, certainly from a fan's perspective, but when people catch up with the Josh Jones news, like you've just mentioned, and look into it a little bit further, it's deadly serious, and that this is players' lives, and this isn't football. The players, they're not earning enough, and there's got to be protection offered. So for me, I think rather than players going off for HIAs, I think the doctors and the referee, if somebody goes down with a head injury, I think it's automatically game finished and your 18th man is activated straight away. I think we've got to look at it now a little bit more seriously and just take a little bit more action, a bit more firmly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to know if some of our older listeners have got any sort of feedback and opinion on this, because the game now is a lot different to 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Like if I watch old videos on YouTube from the 80s, for instance, I mean, I can't remember, I was born late 80s, so I can't remember really much rugby before the Super League era. And the sport, if you watch games from the 80s, it's played in a much different way than what it is now. Now it's about, you know, you'll pass to the first receiver and he'll run as hard as he can at the defensive line. Whereas if you watch old videos, it's all about evading the tackle. You know, they're trying not to get tackled, whereas the approach over the last 20 years has been to really dominate the contact, hasn't it, and get on top, get a front foot, get a good play of the ball, etc. And I just wonder whether we're now getting to a point where it's been fine-tuned that much that you've got these players who are effectively, you know, unbelievable athletes, the especially in full-time game. They're all, you know, they're all 6 foot, 15, 16 stone, whatever, running into each other at full pelt. They're all conditioned to the max. And it's almost got to a, I guess it's almost got to a breaking point now where maybe the game wasn't at 30 years ago because the impacts weren't as hard. Yeah, you'd still have thuggery, if you like, in the game, but the whole running into someone at full pelt wasn't what was causing you the distress. Yeah, if someone punched you around the head, it caused you distress, but that wasn't, it almost feels like every tackle is like a car crash, whether it's a legal tackle or not. And maybe we're seeing that the approach over the last 20 years, the way the game's gone, to having almost like robotic players is starting to maybe catch up with it a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one to chuck in there as well, like many years ago, watching videos like yourself, James, that, you know, the referee only took the defensive line 5 yards back as well, you know, so 10 yards. I mean, some of the play, like Frank, just using Franklin Pella for an example, when, I went the York and Swinton game, and when he's running off the back fence, he's not huge, he's a mountain. And, you know, like you just said there, the impact is unbelievable. And how, when the play, the ball's quick as well, and the defensive line's getting taken 10 yards back. Sometimes the defensive line isn't even meeting the attacking player now. Moving forward, he's only just got back, and the attacking player's running 5 yards further back from the play of the ball. It's like a 15-yard difference into the collision now. Like you say, I think we have got to a point now where I believe myself, you know, we need to be looking after the players. And if that's introducing a couple of rule changes that people don't like, then so be it. Because the true nature of rugby players as well is, we've all seen it, when there is a suspected injury, and you know full well they've took a knock on the head, but they bounce back up and pretend it's not happened. And if they do it quick enough, the referee can't really pull them up on it. So for me, I'd like to see maybe, I don't know, a referee like stopping it and being in charge of that. And it might frustrate people at times, but there's got to be a protection, and it's got to be taken out of the true attitude of rugby players. It's got to be taken away from them, because the athlete in them will always, 9 times out of 10, want to play on.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be in a few RFL briefings over the past few years when they've talked about changes to the laws of the game. There seems to be a little bit of a there's big changes, isn't there, to the tackle height laws that have come in sort of this season at the community game. But there seems to be a little bit of positiveness, if you can call it that, over the tweaks that they've made so far have had a positive impact in terms of reducing risk and such. So they're hoping that they don't have to enforce the tackle height change to the professional game, which is good for the purists, I guess, who want it to stay the same. But you mentioned some of the, I think a couple of years ago, or maybe 2 years ago, they came up with a list of possible law changes, and they selected two at the time to be trialled in the academy game last year, and one of those was the tackle height. I'm trying to think what the other one was now. But a list of the possible changes included things like returning the 5 meter rule, returning to the 5 meter offside rule, things like removing the kickoff or changing the kickoff so that you weren't kicking from as far back, because there's this perception that if you're kicking off from halfway, everyone's legging it full pelt and then you're coming back the other way. There was all sorts of different things like that tossed up. So they are looking at things like that, but I think the game's got to be careful as well that it doesn't become too confusing for the casual viewer. I think it's confusing game as it is if you're new to it. I spoke to someone at Warrington recently. They're trying to do a lot of work to attract the Hong Kong community to the rugby in Warrington. There's a big Hong Kong community building in Warrington over the last 12 months or so. And one of the big obstacles they have to attracting those people to games is explaining them how the rules work. Ultimately, everyone understands football, but as soon as you try and explain to them the rules of rugby, it becomes more and more confusing. And if you keep changing the rules and tweaking them here and there, it gets even more confusing for them casual observers. And you know, you could say that about, well, without wanting to pigeonhole people, but you know, like people who don't live in areas where they've got a rugby league team. So let's say there's someone in the Midlands or down south somewhere who might catch the odd Super League game on TV. He might go to Wembley once a year, but other than that, he doesn't have any live rugby league experience. If he only watches one or two games a year, but every time he watches it, the rule's different, it's going to become confusing and disengage them people. So, yeah, we'll see how that brews over the coming months and years, because certainly the state of play with injuries has to be a concern, especially when you're looking at Bradford using 46 players already. It's only July. They're going to sail past 50, you would think. And should we be in a situation where, in a sport where you only need 17 players, that you're using over 50 to get through a season where, what, they'll play, what, 30 games-ish? Maybe between 30 and 35 games?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, like I say, just to finish your point there, James, I think I absolutely do believe we do need to make changes, but for me, we need to be keeping the fundamentals of rugby league together if we can, where possible. I know people who complain about the scrums, for example, or they're not competitive, don't keep them anymore. Well, I'm a massive advocate of that, because it's an identity to our sport. The same with the kickoffs. You know, if anybody tunes in who doesn't regularly go to rugby, they know how rugby league starts. I'm sure people many a times have flicked the telly on Sky, and they know what happens from a try you kick off. It's the difference between rugby union and rugby league. Scrum's the same. You know, if you went to a country where, you know, people don't watch rugby, and you asked, you know, name me three things about rugby league, they'll mention scrums. So for me, we need to protect the players, but I'm hoping we can do it in a way where we can keep our identity.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned scrums, because I talked about it a little bit on Sunday in the commentary. I thought it was interesting how Bradford were moving their scrums right to the touchline. So they were doing them 10 metres in from the touchline on quite a few occasions, as if they had a set. I mean, it transpired that they didn't have a set move, because they were literally just giving it to the first receiver and he was running it in straight. But that whole moving it across the field, I don't know whether I like it, to be honest, because I feel like it creates confusion. You know, when you see the referee asking, you know, where do you want to scrum down or where do you want to play the ball? I think it causes confusion. But there is a little bit of, I think people who are a bit nerdier than me, maybe there's probably a study to be had about our team's more successful if they move a scrum to the side or have it in the middle. And certainly John Lawless, who commentates on games for BBC with me, he likes the scrum. He likes the ability now that teams have got to put scrum plays on, because that's something, it's a bit like a corner in football, isn't it? You can do a little bit of work on a scrum play. And if you get a scrum in a certain situation, you can set up for it. So, yeah, we'll see how the rules evolve over the next few years. What else have you got for us then, Mike?
Yeah, and a couple of listeners have got some lovely questions for yourself, James. So the first one is, how many IMG points do you get by winning the championship?
You get 0.25, so it's not very many, to be honest. And you only get it for the current season. So if you think, who won the championship last season? London. So London will lose 0.25 points off their score from last season. Of course, they'll gain some because they'll finish 12th. So yeah, it's probably not, it's not a huge amount. It might bump you up a couple of places in the ranking of teams based on on-field performance, but in terms of the overall IMG picture, it's probably not worth a huge amount. You're looking at Widnes are in a decent spot, I would say, in terms of their score on field. Clearly, if Widnes make the playoffs this year, it's a massive improvement on where they've been in previous years. So I think they'd probably, Widnes were eight, were they 18th, something like that. My 18th sounds a bit high, actually. They might be lower than that. The ranking of, it might 21st in my head now. I should really have looked at Matt Shaw did a piece on it, actually. I think based on the league position, I'm sure Widnes were down at 21st or something like that. Because, of course, they've been finishing 9th or 10th in the championship on average. So if Widnes can finish in the playoffs for a couple of years, they'll gradually move up that ranking. But, of course, that only, where you come in that ranking is effectively only 20% of the overall score, if that makes sense. So, listen, I think the reality is the best probably Widnes, what were Widnes, 16th in the IMG? I think the best realistically Widnes could hope for at the moment is 15th. I think Widnes could maybe go above Featherstone, but I think the reality is you have the 12 Super League clubs plus Toulouse and Bradford. The 12 Super League clubs from last season, so I don't mean London. I mean Wakefield instead. I think you add Toulouse and Bradford. I think ultimately them 14 clubs would be ahead of Widnes, and the best, and Widnes are almost 15th as it is. So unfortunately I think it doesn't matter a massive amount, but it'd be nice to win it.
It certainly would, wouldn't it? So someone's asked about what your thoughts are on Lloyd Robey's departure. I suppose putting a little bit of a different spin on this, I suppose I may be disappointed that we've not found a way to get more playing time out of Lloyd Robey, potentially, and fitting him and Jack Owens in, as difficult as that is, I suppose.
Yeah, I sort of said on Twitter, didn't I, last week when it was announced, that the difficulty you've got, people always talk about you want to carry a squad. You want to carry a squad of players. But the problem in doing that is that if you've got a squad of players and you've got a backup, if you like, which, to be fair to Lloyd Robey, you know, with no disrespect to him, he was the backup. Ultimately, if he's not getting a game, he knows he can go to another club and probably be first choice and play every week. It's not just a rugby league thing. It's not just a Widnes thing. It happens in all sports. It's all right saying, oh, well, we should carry a 25, 26-man squad. But you've got to have the right sort of players to be able to do that. And it strikes me that Lloyd Robey's probably at the stage of his career where he wants to play week in, week out. He knows that that's probably not going to be the case at Widnes because of the other personnel that Widnes have got. And so, you know, he's going to North Wales Crusaders where he'll probably be first choice and probably play every week. And when you think that for these players, the part-time, they train, what, 2 or 3 times a week, they play at a weekend, they do a bit of travelling to the games here and there, you can't blame a player really for wanting to play. Whether Widnes could have got him in the team a bit more, again, I think it's hard because Jack Owens is the captain, he's the fullback in my opinion, and there's a reason for that. I know that Roby has shown in fits and starts that he is capable of playing there, but I don't feel like overall he's put a compelling enough argument to say that he should be played ahead of Jack Owens. Whether they could have found a way to do maybe what they did on Sunday where the two of them were interchanging a bit, maybe there was an argument to say that. But again, that only becomes an option because Joe Edge is injured. You know, if Joe Edge wasn't injured, you know, if Joe Edge wasn't injured, Lloyd Roby probably didn't play on Sunday. Jack Owens would have been the fullback and Joe Edge would have been the centre. So, yeah, and I think that's the thing. And I think that's what people have got to realise. You can't just sit on players, or you can't expect players to stay when they'll have opportunities to play elsewhere. And I'm sure there'll be people who'll say that, well, I've seen people say this, the people who say, well, we should have tried to keep Lloyd Roby and maybe not kept Jack Owens. But for me, I think the club's done the right thing and that's that. And I think, yeah, it's a tricky one. Roby as well, he went to Keighley, didn't he? And it didn't quite work out from there either. He had injuries. So there's probably a little bit of frustration from his point of view. He might be one of those players that if he can play every week for North Wales next season or whoever, that he might then kick on and come back a better player from having that real run of games. Only time will tell. In some ways, it's not too dissimilar to Jack Owens' situation when Widnes were in Super League. You know, Jack Owens was at Widnes, had to play on the wing because, you know, Rhys Ambry was the fullback, and it got to a point where it was like, well, he wasn't going to get in at fullback, so, you know, he had to go elsewhere for opportunities. You know, perhaps a slightly different situation, but, you know, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic, isn't it, how things like that do full circle sometimes. But I think from my perspective on it is, I think you're right, James. I think the club's done the right thing. He's the captain. He's captain for a reason, like you said. Massive communicator, talker, and obviously a leader, somebody who Alan really trusts. But I think for me, I suppose if you want to bracket it like that, your second choice fullback needs to be somebody who can operate in an alternative position at a high level. And, you know, we've got Joe Edge, who shown some good signs at fullback last year. We've got Matt Fleming in there as well. And then if rumours are true as well, we've got one or two more that are coming in that can operate at a high level in other areas of the field and can play fullback very well too. So as much as I'm disappointed to see Lloyd go, I can see why. And it sounds cliche, doesn't it? But it's probably the right thing for all parties, really, isn't it?
Yeah, if he wanted to stay and bide his time and was happy to be second choice or happy to be that utility cover like we mentioned earlier, then, you know, he might well have stayed, but you can't blame a player who wants to go and play every week and not want to settle to be back up. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the reason why I suppose dual reg and things like that exist is so that if Widnes do lose a player, that they can dip into that market. I thought last season Widnes missed a big opportunity. I thought after Tom Gilmore got injured, they should have had a go at get Leon Hayes in from Warrington on the dual reg. I thought that was a big missed opportunity last season because I thought, well, ultimately, when you've got a player who's injured for 3 months, you can basically guarantee that player a run of games. Listen, Crusaders are clearly on the up a little bit. They've got a new investment and stuff, and they'll be hoping to maybe get back into the Championship. And I'm sure Lloyd Robey will hope that he can prove a point playing there. But it's an unfortunate thing, but life goes on, I suppose.
Yeah, I think if that happens as well, I think there's certainly going to be a flavour of ex Vikings again, isn't there? Just two more questions, because I'm going to chuck one on myself at the end, actually, because it's just come into my head. But the last one from the listeners is, if there is a vote of no confidence in IMG, which side of the fence do you think Widnes would be on? Do you think they're all for IMG and it works for the club, or do you think that they'd much prefer to not see it?
That's a good question. I think Widnes' current status would be that they would go with the flow. I think they would side with what the majority of clubs were going with. I don't think Widnes want to rock the boat. I don't think they've necessarily got the wherewithal to rock the boat at the moment. I think they'd probably just be one of the, you know, and then they won't be the only club who's like that. They'll be one of the clubs who will just see what the majority want to go with and go along with that. I think the Matt Shaw episode, and if you've not listened to it, what was that, 2-3 weeks ago, the episode of Matt Shaw is well worth a listen. The way he put it across has probably changed my perception on the reality of this situation. I think Widnes have probably got a better... Some people might argue that Widnes would have a better chance of getting Super League if the IMG criteria stayed. I would argue that Widnes have got a better chance of Super League if you just had straightforward promotion relegation. Whether they've got a chance of Super League in either situation is up for a debate. But I think if you're talking about... If it's IMG, you've got to get the points. And ultimately, I don't think many teams will ever get near the points tally you need to get into Super League. But ultimately, if you didn't have that system and it was just automatic promotion relegation, there is a chance that you could do what London did last season and sneak in. Now, you'd like to think that if that happened to Widnes, they'd have a better stab at it than London have this season. But then the reason London haven't had a stab of it is because it's the IMG criteria. So, I've seen that there's been a little bit of conjecture, hasn't there, about IMG, where we're a couple of years in, we've not really seen any difference. There's no more sponsorship deals, Championship still forgotten. All they seem to have done is this structural thing that has basically just pretty much done nothing. We're going to end up with the same 12 Super League teams that we had last season anyway. So it'd be interesting to see how it evolves. It'd be a big call, a big step to move away from it at this stage. But I think, like Matt said in the podcast the other week, I think ultimately, regardless of whether it's IMG or not, all Widnes can control is themselves. They've got to engage with the fans. They've got to get the crowds up. They've got to do well on the pitch. And, you know, they're making strides in some of those areas. So I think rugby league in general has got to move away from this entitlement. Like, we're not entitled to be anywhere or anything. We're not entitled to be a popular sport. We're not entitled to media coverage. I think everyone's got a bit complacent over the last 10, 15 years with the Sky money. Ultimately, you rugby clubs are a business like everyone else. You've got to find your own sponsors. You've got to find your own fans. You've got to do the right things to get them things. So hopefully that's how Widnes will think. But I'm not sure if there is a vote of no confidence coming in IMG. I don't know. I think it'd be a big step for that to happen. I did think it was interesting. I think, was it in the Eye this week, they were saying about staff at RL Commercial or at the RFL were at risk of redundancy. I do find it interesting that over the years, there was that breakaway, wasn't there, where Super League took control of their own thing, but they basically just took all the old RFL staff into Super League and tried to run it different. And then they came back together And then all them staff just went into RL Commercial, and it's like, well, there's a reason why nothing changes, because although you're saying, well, now Super League runs it, now the RFL run it, now RL Commercial, it was the same staff just moving around, and they were doing all this moving the deck chairs around. I suppose it is like moving the deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit. You've still got the same people. It's still the same people. Whether it was RL Commercial, the top bod of RL Commercial was the top bod at the RFL, or he was the top bod at Super League Europe, you know, and so it's no wonder it's not getting anywhere. That's a long-winded way of answering that question.
Yeah, I think personally, for what it's worth, for my two pence, is I think IMG works for Widnes at the moment. The reason why I do, we've got no real benefactor, and I think what would happen if this grading criteria wasn't in place and it was one up, one down, I think Bradford would be spending even more than what they're doing now. I think Featherstone would be spending more. York would be spending more. And we're not in a rush. I think we've seen under Alan, yes, we need to improve on field, and we're doing it. But what it does allow us is it allows time, because everybody, these clubs that we've just mentioned, they need to grow. How many people come to games, the facilities, etc., etc., etc. And what we're seeing with Widnes at the moment is, you know, the ladies' teams going from strength to strength, the academy sort of things coming back, the community and the kids turning up on the pitch, and it allows us to give time to that. I think if the grading went away, I think other sides would move away from that, and you might be in a position again where even if we stuck to what we was doing, stuck to task, you'd be up against more bigger spenders, but in terms of bringing overseas players in and so on and so forth. But that's just my opinion. But as for IMG, I think if IMG got removed, then it's like, well, yeah, that's great, but what next? Like you said, rearranging the deck chairs, it's like, well, that's good, but where now? You're just rudderless again. And, you know, we've got to go with something at the end of the day in rugby league. I think you've got to stick to a plan and see something through, because we never, ever seem to do that. But if my message from IMG is, if you really want to impact the sport in certain areas and sort certain things out, prefer, you know, pick a couple of things like dual registration, sort that out. It doesn't work for the development of players. It doesn't work for the player, for the club receiving the players half of the time. I mean, just look at Dan Okoro. I mean, I know he's not on dual registration at the moment at Bradford, but is he going to turn up at Whitehaven on Sunday and play for them? You know, sort some of them things out.
Yeah, I did think it was quite funny, actually. As I was getting into my car on after the game on Sunday, Lucas Green and Dan Okoro were getting in the car together. Having played against, having basically trained with each other all week and then played against each other at the weekend. I did have a little wry smile at that one.
And the last question, just because it popped into my head, because I was looking at the league table before, James, and I think if I'm right in saying, like, two go down, and then the third place side from the bottom looks like it will play probably Keighley in a one-off game to decide the last place in the championship. Now,
they play the playoff winner, the League One playoff winner. Yeah,
So assuming that would argue, for argument's sake at the moment, be Keighley, and not to be disrespectful to Dewsbury, let's say they're gone. For anybody who's looked at that. That league table at the bottom, it is very tight. I think there might even be four teams tied on 10 points. Who do you see finishing second bottom, and who do you see going into that kind of elimination playoff?
There's four on 12 at the moment. Swinton, Halifax, Whitehaven, Barrow. Halifax will surely get away from there, is what I would say. I think probably Whitehaven would finish second bottom. Just because, like you say, the injuries they've had, I think they've sort of been clinging on the last few years. I know they made the playoffs through the year, but every year we seem to get a little bit of, you know, this financial difficulties there. I hope Barrow don't go down, because they're one of my business clients, so it'd be it might be a difficult conversation if they went down. But yeah, I think you know, Barrow have picked up some decent results. Like, it, although they're down there, they've beaten, like, they beat Sheffield, didn't they, the other week? So, yeah, for me, it'd be Whitehaven, I think. And then, I mean, you look at the playoffs, Doncaster doing really well at the moment. They're sixth in the table. I don't think many people would have had them down for reaching the playoffs at the end of the season, but it's probably going to be a tough one to call that. But as long as Widnes are in there at the end of the season, that's all that matters.
Absolutely.
Right, thanks everyone for joining us this week. Another podcast in the bag. Please do subscribe, like, review, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are going to be reaching out, hopefully, to find some sponsors to keep me and Mike in bread and water in the next few weeks. So if you know anyone who might be willing to sponsor the podcast, please do get in touch. We've got the Widnes Rugby League fans page on Facebook, which seems to be going from strength to strength. And we've got Widnes Rugby on Twitter as well. So please do give them channels a follow. But from me and Mike, that's all for this week, and we'll see you next time.